Product Breakfast Club.
Product Breakfast Club. Product Breakfast Club. Product Breakfast Club.
I couldn't hit that last high note there.
Oh boy,
let's let me try it again. Like Breakfast Club.
Oh, oh wow, that was good.
Thank
that
you.
Was good.
Thank you. Hey everybody, welcome to the Product Breakfast Club podcast.
Welcome back, everybody who's been here before, and welcome for the first time, all you newbies, all you fresh listeners, fresh from
fresh meat.
Welcome to the Product Breakfast Club. This is a podcast. I'm your host, Jake Knapp, in San Francisco.
And I'm your other host, Jonathan Courtney, in Berlin. And if you're wondering if that this is a podcast isn't enough of a description for you, then you definitely need to leave immediately, because that's about as deep as it goes. And I want to say a big hello to all the new listeners coming from John Gruber's talk show. Hopefully there's some residual people who didn't just want to listen to the specific episode we talked about, because a lot of people came in. I think actually, so we had a 25% increase in downloads after the first 2 days of the ad. So we have to still see how it plays out for the whole week. But it looks like a lot of new people came from the talk show. So Jake, we have to be on our, first of all, we can't say anything bad about Apple anymore.
Oh,
that's the first thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Hold back, right, because you know these John Gruber fans, man.
Well, okay. So do you need to back up a second and give some context about what the ad is you're talking about? Because I know that most people tune in just to hear meta conversation about this podcast. We have a bet going on. You won round one of the bet, which was you bet that we would get to 10,000 listeners by the end of last year. I said,
yeah,
that's crazy talk. Actually, it happened.
Yeah.
You got there, but now double or nothing, you're going for 20,000.
Yeah, by June, isn't it?
Of June. Yes, but you're gaming the system by advertising. Yeah. This
with
is
money.
Your first
with
foray.
Money.
Gaming the system with money. It's going to cost you much more than you're going to get from me in the unlikely event that you succeed.
But I'm trying to get $30 from you, and that ad cost $5,000. So I really want to win this bet. Fuck.
So
I'm not very good at math.
So the ad, how'd you decide where to advertise? What does it look like? Because we talked about earlier, a few episodes back, we were talking about podcasts. We were talking about Gimlet Media. We were talking about Anchor. They got acquired by Spotify, and the market for podcast advertising. It's so hard actually to advertise on podcasts. I sent a link out to my newsletter of this story about somebody just documenting they wanted to spend $50,000 on podcast ads. And they were just like, here's how it went. You know, they were able to do it and they felt good about it in the end, but it was like a mess trying to figure out how to do it, where to go. It's just like a one-off deal every time. It sounds like to me, you've just been through it. What was the experience like?
Yeah, it was interesting. So first of all, I want to give all the credit to Amr at AJ and Smart. He's the one who targeted the talk show, brought that idea to me, kind of figured out how we would contact them. There seems to be like a company or this person who buys all the ads for both John Gruber's podcast and Marco Arment's podcast. They're both sort of tech, Apple-ish podcasts. Amr came to me and he was like, hey, we should probably buy an ad. Like, it would be cool to buy an ad on the talk show, because I think like John Gruber fans would also maybe like deep dives and nerdy product talk and also rambling. And so I was like, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's find out how much it costs. Let's find out how much it costs. And so he emailed. They said $5,000. I was like, okay, I need to win $30. So that's perfect. And actually, it was funny because the episode that he ran the ad in, first of all, John Gruber did a really great job reading the ad we wrote. He read it really naturally, added a lot of flair to it. And it sounded like he actually listened to a little bit of the podcast to get to add some more flair to it, which was cool, which I didn't even expect. And also, it was an episode, one of the only episodes I've heard of the talk show, where he completely fucked up the audio from start to finish. And it sounded like he was recording it in a toilet. So it was kind of funny, like our super expensive ad ran on this episode where you couldn't really hear it. No, but it still worked out great. And I assume John Gruber fans are willing to listen through, as our fans are willing to listen through all of the bullshit surrounding the actual content. I think it was well worth it. And so now I'm looking for more podcasts to sponsor, because here's the thing, Jake, right? If this podcast doesn't grow, we're not going to do it anymore, because it's not about the fun of making podcasts. It's not about the great audience that we've built and the loyal following.
We don't care about those people. Feeling. No, it's all
Fuck
the new
that.
People.
Listen, it's the numbers. It's the numbers. It's the graph pointing upwards. I want to see the green arrow pointing upwards, or I don't give a fucking shit. And I think that's also going to be a good segue into that topic of growth at all costs and, you know, not really caring about the customer is probably going to be a good segue into Apple's announcements this week. Oh! All the talk show people left.
Let's talk about this. So, because you actually are catching me in the perfect, I think perfectly primed, because I looked at the headlines.
The website.
I looked at the website. I looked at the headlines of what they introduced.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I understand. It doesn't feel like super exciting to me. I just could. And so I was wondering if you can tell me what's going on. What should we care about?
Yeah. What? So I'll give you an update also for the people who don't kind of nerd out on Apple stuff. I only managed to catch up on watching the conference yesterday. I always just go to stratechery.com, Ben Thompson, whenever I just want to understand, like, what's the strategy behind doing this? And then I read his article, I'm like, oh, that's the strategy behind them doing this. So Apple announced a couple of things on Monday this week. And oh, hey, everybody, on Monday morning, whoever listens, like the people who listen to this on Monday morning, they're the best people. If you're not listening to this the second it comes out, you know what you are. I'm just kidding. So on Monday evening, Apple announced Apple TV Plus, which is, there's no other way of looking at it besides it's a Netflix competitor, but more locked to Apple's hardware, even though they are looking at putting it on some Apple TV Plus app on some specific hardware suppliers, like even Samsung. But Apple TV Plus, which is a direct target at Netflix, you know, where they're going to spend billions on creating their own shows. They also announced Apple Arcade. By the way, I might get some of the names wrong because I don't have it open in front of me. Apple Arcade is a subscription gaming service, so you can pay subscription and get kind of an all-you-can-eat premium games, and also get some exclusive games that are going to be developed for that platform. Works on Apple TV and all iOS devices. That's pretty interesting. And all of these were rumored, all of them were leaked, including then also Apple Card, which is a credit card from Apple, which I think was actually the most interesting announcement, to be honest. Oh, there was also Apple News. Couldn't give less of a shit about Apple News subscription. Like, literally, I'm asleep even mentioning it. So that was like zero interest to me. So I think the interesting thing here, and one of the things that I've also seen, the sentiment from Stratechery or also like The Verge or a couple of these other websites, is that this is Apple looking for other people's business models that they can use to grow their business. Not necessarily the most interesting or exciting or product-y things, not necessarily sort of the innovative path that Apple kind of often goes down. Rather like a, look, we're running out of iPhone growth. We need something here. And here are some ideas. Here's the services push that we've always said we were going to do. And it's like a pure 100% services push, which is kind of interesting. But to me, the only moment that really stood out, the only moment where I was like, ah, oh, was when they showed off the Apple Card having no numbers. I was like, yeah, that's the Apple moment I was waiting for. It has no numbers. That was the moment for me, really. But yeah, it was kind of like a weird event. I think it was kind of like looking into the future of Apple's sort of trying to broaden their ecosystem of services and lock people into their products even more. But I think out of everything for me, it was the Apple Card that was the most interesting and weird product for Apple to go into. What do you think about the card in particular?
Yeah, I mean, the card was the one thing I felt like I understood when I skimmed through the page and I was like, oh, that sounds like a good deal. It's like there's no fees. It's on the phone. It has a cool looking card. I'd probably want that.
No numbers.
So, yeah. So I just sort of, I put in my email address to be notified about that guy. I looked at the other stuff and yeah. I mean, my take is always like, okay, look, you know, you said Apple's like known for being innovative, but I mean, in a way they're not. Like,
well, yeah.
They're known, I think, for finding a thing that maybe was already there. And then
yeah, they just wait and see.
Then they just execute so well on that thing.
They innovate on integrations and execution.
Yeah. And there are certainly counterexamples. There are things they've done first, for sure. But historically, I feel like they're really good at being focused and picking a thing and then doing that one thing really well. This is interesting because there are a lot of things. Of course, Apple's a big company. So for them to announce four things, you know, if Google was announcing it, they would have announced like 30 and done like probably
80.
Well. So yeah, it would have done,
you know, we're launching 50 cards and one of them squirts water.
80 new focus points. So yeah. So four, it sounds like a lot, but maybe, you know, it's not for them. I mean, I'm torn here. Like first of all, there's just like a gut reaction, which is none of these things super excites me because maybe it comes down to there's no physical object attached. Like it's more exciting.
Except for the card with no buttons.
The card. And that was the thing that actually got me excited. It was like, oh, that physical thing. Well, the other things, there's like, there's nothing physical. It's like kind of hard to get psyched. Apple historically doesn't do great on services, even I think software outside of the OS. It's always been tough for them to do stuff on the cloud. Like maybe I should pause for a second and think if that's just my knee-jerk response from forever ago. And maybe there are some counterexamples.
They don't do great on services.
But it feels like it's been tough. Like iCloud is getting better, I think, but it's not. Companies develop, I think, these competencies, these things they get really good at over the long term, and it's like in the DNA.
Apple
executes really well, focuses really well, they build amazing hardware, they build amazing OSs. They've been doing that for a really long time and been doing it really well, and you look at the big hits for them and that's what those things are. The App Store is an exception. It's a service, right? Maybe the App Store, maybe if you look at these as like analogies to the App Store, then you say maybe they have already the competency to do this. But I think you got to be skeptical of new services. But then you also got to say, wait a second, if Apple makes a strong choice to go after something that exists, like a model that exists, and they do it in their way where like quality is going to be super high, it's going to be nicely tied to these amazing hardware and OS experiences, then you got to think like, I don't want to be too fast to dismiss them. Like if I was Netflix, I definitely want to take it seriously. I don't get the news thing that much, you know. On the arcade thing's kind of interesting because who are they competing with here exactly? Like they already have this great platform iOS. Yeah, maybe Steam. I mean, they're already raking cash on games on iOS.
Oh, yeah.
You look at the App Store on iOS, and this is something that I think is kind of funny because, you know, we've talked about Apple being like, oh, you know, we're taking your attention and your, you know, like screen time and everything very seriously. And then right now, like you open up the App Store and it's like games, 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 games.
Yeah.
Because they're making tons of money there already. So, you know, maybe there's a bigger strategy here. Interesting to think, like, is it getting to the point where they can compete with like consoles? Is it going to be harder and harder for consoles to evolve? Like, yeah, I don't know. What's your take? My take is running out of, the wheels are falling off of my monologue. So yeah, please take over.
I have two things. Number one, I think there's like a simple kind of way to look at it, and is that Apple is trying to increase the customer lifetime value of each person who has bought an Apple product now, because the people are not, like their original plan was people just keep buying new Apple products, but they can't really keep just coming up with new crazy shit all the time. So now what they want to do is, you know, you have an iPhone, so why not try to create extra revenue streams from the same people? And for me, when the AirPods came out, I was like, okay, so what does that do? It actually increases the customer lifetime value, or the amount that a customer spends with the brand, by $199, because everyone wants that add-on. Everyone wants that upsell. So I think that the way I view these things, if I'm being cold about it, is just their add-ons to the customers that already exist. It's not about bringing in new people, but it's about like locking in more people to the broader ecosystem. I mean, the card is definitely a way to lock people to the iPhone ecosystem, and a very aggressive way to do it. One thing that people don't understand about Apple, so I see a lot of people complaining about the reward, the cashback is not that good, the interest rates are not that good, but Apple never competes on that kind of thing. Apple never competes on the stats or the power or anything kind of like that other companies do really well. Apple competes on just the massive integration it has. And even if the first version of the card is crappy and whatever, you know, just the fact that you can set up your iPhone and super easily within minutes set up a credit card within it. Like we've worked on a lot of these startups in the world that are creating new banking paradigms and new whatever cool banking apps or whatever. But even if these products are 1 billion times better, if these banks are 1 billion times cooler, Apple has the massive, massive advantage of being the company that owns the hardware that all of this stuff runs on. So for me, it's just one of those, I'm thinking to all the companies that all of these new kind of digital only banks, and I'm like, oh fuck, like they're probably looking at this and feeling a little bit worried. You know, they know that a lot of people, you know, like you and I, might not really care if the other bank has like 1% more or 1% less, if it means that we can have a cool card with no numbers on it and have this cool thing built into the phone from day one. So I think for me, the, you know, all of the things that were announced were interesting in a way, kind of don't care at the same time. But in terms of like a public company has to always grow and can't be seen as stagnating, what else are they going to do? I guess they have this idea that there's going to be this new Apple car coming up or something like that. But there's probably not a huge amount of growth left in their most popular product, which is the iPhone. So they're going the way of Amazon, which is building a lot of services, building a lot of subscription services so that you have recurring revenue from people using the services already. And one analogy I saw was that Amazon used to create things like the Kindle or the Echo or whatever. And, you know, once people are in the ecosystem, they start selling microwaves, you know? Once you're really in the ecosystem, they can start doing the boring stuff and kind of bundle it together. And I think that's almost where we are with Apple. You know, they're starting to sell us the toasters now, the basic utilities that other people have and other people are doing, but in the Apple-style ecosystem. And I think, you know, they have enough money to see how this plays out for a long time. So I think it's, yeah, we shouldn't underestimate them, even if we feel like it's boring.
They have a long time, and yet at the same time, there's urgency because you look at the iPhone 10, and we've talked about this, like it's already like kind of the perfect size and like pretty close to the perfect weight, and it's like super responsive. Like it's kind of hard to know how that thing gets much better. It's just a piece of glass with a screen on it. Like
services
does everything. Are people going to still pay, you know, $1,000 for an iPhone a year from now, 2 years from now? 3 years from now? I mean, maybe. Like, I suppose they've proved us wrong before, but yeah, I think that market is going to, it's going to be tough to continue getting people to refresh as often as they have. And so, yeah, they've got to figure out something new. So this makes sense. It's going to be super interesting to see how it plays out. I'm curious from your perspective as like, let's just to deep dive on games for a second. You're a person who plays games.
I want to talk about the game strategy.
Casual gamer in the world. And so to me, I look at this and I'm like, I just got a, you know, Switch a few months ago. And like, for my gaming needs, that's better. Like having a controller actually makes a huge difference. And I don't really want to be able to play games on every single device I have everywhere. Plus, it kind of sucks compared to having a controller. So no thanks probably for me. But I'm curious from your perspective, because I don't think I'm very representative. What do you think about this?
Okay, I have to say one thing before I forget it.
Okay.
I played one of the coolest video games I've ever played in my entire life this weekend, and it's called Baba Is You. It's on the Switch. You have to download it immediately. It's like the coolest, craziest, most mind-bending puzzle game I've ever played in my life. It's unbelievably cool. Just leaving that there, Baba Is You is one of the best games I've ever played.
Okay, looking into that.
And it's just made by one guy. It's so unbelievably cool. The concept just blew my mind, like, unbelievable. Okay, so one thing I want to say, I want to jump to Microsoft for a second to look at their gaming strategy because I think it's actually the most interesting one. They brought out the Xbox. The Xbox kind of followed the standard narrative of how consoles work. You know, they have exclusive games just to that piece of hardware. Yada, yada, yada. Then they started to slowly open it up to kind of cross-play between PC, you know, Windows devices and the Xbox. So basically, they kind of reduced the necessity for the hardware box itself. And now they're trying something which I think is super interesting. And I think if they can pull this off, it will be a massive success. And what they're playing with is the idea of having their service, which is called Xbox Game Pass, which is sort of like the Netflix of games that are kind of licensed by Microsoft. And they are experimenting with having Xbox Game Pass run on other consoles. For example, one very popular Xbox One game was just announced on the Nintendo Switch, a game called Cuphead. And a couple of leaks have come out showing that the kind of Game Pass and Xbox Live integration is going to be kind of launching around the same time. So the idea that maybe, you know, Nintendo makes a console, maybe PlayStation make a console, but maybe Microsoft doesn't make a console next time, or does, but they don't really see it as part of their big picture strategy. And all they're really doing is similar to kind of, you know, I don't know if you saw how Google, actually not similar to that, let's keep that separate, but basically similar to how Netflix as an app would work within, you know, your PlayStation or within Netflix or within the Nintendo Switch, Xbox would just be an app and all the games that are exclusive to Xbox are just exclusive to that digital product, that service within the other consoles. And I think that approach is super interesting. I mean, it means that you have to be super reliant on having excellent exclusives, but what it actually does is allows a massive audience to experience these exclusive Xbox games while Microsoft still gets a good cut of the revenue, still gets to grow their audience, but then companies like Nintendo can benefit by having these products on their product as well. So I find they haven't announced this like I've described it yet, but it's the rumor. And they've started to bring out bits and pieces of it. And this year are kind of all the new consoles are going to be announced. But for me, that's super, super interesting. Now, last week, Google announced their gaming plans. They launched or announced Google Stadia, which I fucking hate the name, but
Google
whatever.
Google Stadia. I haven't even heard about this. I'm going to look it up right now. Google Stadia.
So Google Stadia is probably the fifth attempt over the last few years to create a streaming-only gaming service. And the idea would be that because Google has such massive server farms, they can run the games on their server farms and stream them directly to you.
I just want to for like real quick, like, sorry to interrupt, but I searched for Google Stadia. No. You shouldn't say sorry. I interrupted you rudely, but I had to because I searched for Google Stadia and just the URL is store.google.com/magazine/Stadia.
What?
Like, how big of a deal can it be if it's buried under like three different...
I'm just sorry.
But like, if you just look at their homepage versus the page for Apple Arcade, which is apple.com/apple-arcade, which is still not great. I don't know why it's not apple.com/arcade. Come on, guys.
Sort out your domain names.
Domain names, it matters. It's part of the design. Like, make it nice and simple and clean. Why isn't it just apple.com/arcade? I don't know. Maybe there's a good reason. But at any rate,
branded. Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
Leave that in. But the marketing pages. Actually, you know what? I'm going to come back to this. Let's bookmark this. I'm going to let you finish talking.
Okay.
But I want to critique Apple's marketing page.
Okay.
The good and the bad. We'll come back to that.
Good. Okay. So the idea here is that you would, rather than having an expensive piece of hardware that runs everything locally on the box that you have, everything would be streamed. So like you could run a 4K, super crazy, futuristic, high, amazing graphics video game on a crappy laptop or on a phone because you're streaming it. The interesting thing about the Google Stadia play is that everyone saw it as like a gaming play and getting into the games industry. But behind it, if you watch the presentation, what it really is just a way to, in my opinion, a pretty clever way to increase watch time on YouTube because it's actually really heavily integrated into YouTube. It's actually cool. They showed like you're watching someone play a game and there's a button that says play and then you click it. And then essentially, because you have a subscription, you can just straight away start playing that video game right within the YouTube interface. And for me, that's like, okay, that's amazing. If you had a free version of it and it's ad supported and you're increasing the watch time on YouTube, counting some of that watch time as games because it's being streamed to you as a video, I think that could be a really clever, really intelligent, crazy business model, but I don't know what they're doing. So now, that's Google. I told you about Xbox. Apple, I'm not excited about it, if I'm being really honest, because I don't enjoy mobile games. However, a lot of people do enjoy mobile games. The only thing is that like a lot of the people who spend a lot of time on mobile games are playing freemium games, and Apple is now going after the paid games and trying to make a subscription service out of it. I personally can't imagine anyone that I know being interested in this product, but I'm always wrong about Apple. But I'm just going to put my line in the sand and say that, not that Apple is going to ever admit it, but that this Apple Arcade product is just not going to have a huge amount of support from Apple like 2 years from now. I think that's something that they'll bring out and then they'll just let it rot.
Like Game Center, perhaps?
Oh!
There have been... You remember Game Center?
The bubbles haunt my mind. Jesus, those bubbles. The bubs. What about the marketing pages?
Yeah, the marketing pages. Okay, so let's talk. First of all, I hate criticizing because I know I've been inside building stuff, and we all know how hard it is to build stuff and how easy it is to criticize things.
Yeah. Look at the AJ and Smart website.
Look at the AJ and Smart.
Yeah. Jesus Christ, don't look at it, please.
Let's critique that. Maybe we could critique
no,
that.
No, never even open episode. It. It will critique your laptop. It will be broken.
So there's just a few things that I really feel let down by the headline on Apple.com.
Oh.
Because they are so good at marketing headlines. Look, for example, at how Apple does it. They always, in the marketing headline, have kind of gotten to the heart of the value proposition and make you want the thing just with the headline. They're so careful about text. And I'm really let down by this. It says, new ways to experience TV, news, and magazines, and games.
And games! Who and the fuck wrote this?
And a new kind of credit card. Like, it's so unenthusiastic. It's just like, there are new ways. Okay.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's just inherently not exciting. And it's hard to come up with those. I'm sure there's a lot of people involved. You want to be clear.
But they're usually fun.
But they're usually more fun. There's usually something
they're usually
that's
goofy.
Like, oh, yeah. Goofy something. Yeah.
Listen to this one. All right. Are you ready? Are you ready for your mind to be blown? Apple Arcade. Games that redefine games. Come on.
Okay. But it is closer to like the Apple like confidence and cheekiness, right? That I like.
Yeah.
Because they're like, we're going to redefine games.
Yeah.
It does feel like Apple.
It's more Apple.
It does feel at least, it's like, if you want to give them the benefit of the doubt, it's like kind of exciting. But the top headline is just a disappointment. I mean, the TV one, original stories from the most creative minds in TV and film. I think that's good. I don't think in that headline, you know, and I'm really being especially jerky because it's like the headline should stand on its own. But I'm just so used to them having amazing headlines that I kind of want the headline to explain in a nutshell, like, why is this relevant compared to Netflix? Like, why is it?
I love the and a new kind of credit card just slapped on the bottom. Yeah. New ways to experience TV, news, and magazines, and games, and a new type. You would fail in school if you presented that sentence.
Yeah,
it would be like,
I know.
We need to put you outside now.
Totally. You know what? Actually, if I were to just armchair redesign the top page of Apple.com, this will probably be gone by the time we actually post this episode. But what if it just said new in like 600 points?
Yeah.
Just the word new. And then they had the links to the things underneath. Apple TV Plus, Apple News Plus, Apple Arcade, Apple Card. Because that in and of itself, with the Watch the Keynote link, tells me everything. Oh, there's new stuff. You know, they don't even need the word new. You just like have those four things.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's followed, if you scroll down from there, it's followed by
I'm scrolling.
The best part of this whole thing, which is the Apple TV Plus logo.
Oh, you like it?
Well, in full, I really like how the plus is like 100% bright and it actually glows, and just the detailing on how the glow is coming from the plus.
Oh, yeah.
The V and the T.
Skeuomorphism is back.
It's hot. It's so nice. And then like the Apple is actually just has that little bit of like glint, like that little bit of dimension. It just somehow this is just so beautiful to me. It feels like a TV because it goes from kind of on the top of the page, you've got kind of a very dark, but it's gray. And then as you scroll down, it gets darker, darker, darker. So that TV just feels like it's on a screen. I don't know. It just.
Oh, true. Yeah. That. It does go from a light black, kind of grayish to a pitch black.
Yes.
Oh, that's nice. I like the animation as well.
The subtlety of the fades, how the text on the top and the links on the top fade out and the Apple TV logo comes up is so sweet that, again, it just makes me think like, how did that kind of care happen on that detail? And then the headline.
New ways to experience TV news and magazines and games and a new type of credit card. Hello.
Oh, man. I don't know. It's funny. I know the people who do those headlines are amazing because it's this tough material to work with. The News Plus module, the Apple News Plus module, it's hard to make this exciting. It's a bunch of pictures of magazines. Yeah. I don't know. I guess maybe there are people who get really psyched about magazines, but to me, it's just like,
Wasn't that always on the iPad? Like, what?
Yeah.
Great, it's a subscription now. No one reads magazines.
Wasn't that already a thing I ignored on the iPad?
Exactly. They're like, remember this? That should be the headline.
Yeah. I don't know. And then the games redefine games. I mean, like the headline, it is Apple-y, but I wish it got to like the heart of like, I don't know, what's special about this?
Yeah.
I do long for them to say like, here's how this is going to be different and better than before.
Yeah.
I guess their bet is just, we're going to get really good at kind of curating and collecting this content and make it really worth your while. And one thing that, you know, I think a weakness with Netflix, with Amazon Prime Video, is that you go to those services and so much of what's on there is like kind of crappy, right? Like the things that are available on Netflix at any given time, like maybe the original stuff is good, but at least for me, if I, my watching habits with Netflix is that I subscribe for a month or two and then unsubscribe.
Really?
And I do that every, yeah, I do that every like 6 to 8 months.
That's weird, dude.
Like I'll do it when Stranger Things comes out and I'll watch Stranger Things. You know, or I like bought like season one of Westworld, but I'm not, to me, the, so much of the stuff that's on there is just a waste of my time. And I hate that feeling of like, oh, let's see what's on Netflix. Let's see what's on Amazon Prime. And you end up like just scrolling through these movies that I would just never,
it's
like
shit.
If I was just choosing of all the movies, I wouldn't choose these usually, right? Like sometimes there's a delightful gem and you're like, oh, great, that one from the 1980s or whatever. But most of the time it's like, ah. So I think that one thing Apple could do here that would be interesting is that they're really good at curation. And so it could be interesting to see, how do they curate the arcade? Like, does that make it feel better than you go to the app store and it's just like a zillion games and they might all be bad or something? I don't know. You know, that's interesting.
Maybe.
It could be interesting on TV.
As a gamer, I don't care about it. So I'm assuming that it's kind of targeted at a, like the kind of more, I don't know, what's it called?
Just casual, right?
Casual, exactly. Casual gamers. Yeah. But the Switch has really dived in on that as well. And at the free-to-play games, you know, like Fortnite, they're grabbing all the casual gamers, so...
The barrier to play the Switch, though, the barrier to play Switch has got to be... I mean, it's huge. You're right. I mean, Fortnite, it's going to be
so
tough for
good.
Them to get the next Fortnite or, like, the, you know, to, like, happen upon that huge hit. Because those hits are kind of rare, like, in just by the numbers. And those are, I imagine, where all the money goes.
Like, if they were serious about this, they would have released, at least given an attempt at making a simple controller as well. That would have been a much more exciting marketing play for me to see... that Apple is actually taking this seriously, but I just...
It would have been fun. It would have been fun. Like
a little Johnny Ive controller. The buttons.
Yeah, that would have been fun. That would have been a moment of excitement. Although I can get... Like, do you ever see somebody playing the Switch on, like, public transit?
I cycle. But yes, I get what that would look like.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So, I mean, just it's rare. In my experience, it's rare, but I do see people. But it's like... I'm like, well, that's a bit of an investment for them. Like, time and just, like... awkwardness wise to get it out and like be like on the controls and everything. It just always seems like I'm like, wow, that person's like they're invested in playing that game right now. It's not
dedicated.
Like a casual thing. And I don't know. Anyway, I don't know.
Here's the thing, right? As a person who enjoys games and I will occasionally buy games on the App Store, there's never been a moment where I was like, oh, you know, if this game, like Monument Valley 2, if this game was behind a subscription paywall, just wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
Unlike, there are no games on iOS that are reviewed and talked about in the games industry high enough that I would ever care. So if that starts to happen, you know, if they start to take gaming seriously, which would mean they would have to really invest in like well-known game teams, like which they say they are doing here, you know, then maybe. But for now, nah.
It's interesting to try to speculate whether they can do, I think... Let's say two things well, because I look at the card and I'm like, I'm compelled.
Yeah, me too.
Like it has this kind of like expense tracking stuff built in a nice way that I just imagine that's going to be a good experience. I'm compelled by that already. Okay. So like sold on that one. Let's just ignore that one. News.
Yeah.
You're not going to sell me on that one. So like, let's take that one off the table. So really we're talking about TV and games. So question is, can they do two things where the job is to like really... curate and draw people who are going to create interesting stuff and give those people enough incentive and creative license to do world best work there in a genre that's like Netflix has managed to do that. Amazon Prime, even they've managed to get great shows produced there. So I guess it's not so crazy to think that they can do it for TV. And maybe it's not so crazy to think they can do it for games. It's just hard to imagine being able in a big company to actually do that with two things at the same time.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. I mean, look, they have the most money of all time. Yeah. The only thing that's going to stop them from making this work is not having the right people with the right kind of amount of excitement to make this work. So it's not like Tim Cook is going to be personally sitting down working on these shows. They got to have someone running this.
It would be great if he was.
Tim is just like, nah, don't like that scene. Let's change it. No, let's change that scene. I think it's often when it comes to these things, the reason I don't trust Apple with gaming is because I've never ever experienced them being passionate about gaming on stage. They use games to show off the new chip every year or the new AR thing.
True for like, but for not just like recently, yeah. but for like 20 years,
yeah. like 100 years. Yeah, they just, but at the same time, then it's just like, whatever.
Right, right.
So, I mean, whatever. Who cares? Apple's a fucking great company. I'm excited about them. You know what we didn't discuss as well? In the weeks leading up to these kind of not super exciting announcements, but that may be big businesses for Apple, they slowly squirted out updates to a huge amount of their product. So AirPods 2 came out. The iMac got updated. They brought back the iPad mini with the big old bezels and the old pen. And they updated the iPad Pro, which can also only use the old pen. Apple's weird with this stuff.
Oh, it's the old pen? That's funny. I would think they were so embarrassed about how the old pen docked that they would just make it vanish.
That's what I love about Apple, you know? They do things that are so related to the, and what Tim Cook is really good at as well, to like, what's it called? It's like, how much stuff is still in the factory that needs to be used?
Yeah.
And the demand for that stuff. They're like, look, we still have the chipset here. We still have these screens. We still, like, we can still use that stuff. We can still build that stuff. And we can build that stuff at such a high margin now that it doesn't matter that the demand is going to be lower for the iPad mini. We can grow the business and we can bring in revenue by doing it.
Right.
And Apple have always done that. And people are always confused. They're like, why is the 17-year-old iPhone still there and still $499? And it's because people still buy it and because they've got such an efficient system for selling these older products at a massive margin. So I saw people being like, what the fuck? Like, why is the iPad mini coming back? And why is it? And I'm just like, look, they've done the math. They've looked at their factories. They've looked at their warehouses. They've looked at their operations. And they're like, yeah, probably this many people will buy it. And because it costs us now 8 cents to produce it, it's fine. Whatever. We're still even using the old clicky button. It's still the old school real clicky button on that iPad mini.
And I love
it. Really,
I love it. I'd be tempted.
Yeah.
I bought an iPad Pro before all this happened and I would have been very tempted by the iPad Air with that.
Yeah.
Except that I'm glad I have the iPad Pro because probably, I mean, you know,
the
other thing they do to you is you're like, you know, if you were on the fence between like the iPad Air and the iPad Pro, they might tip you over there with like, the Pencil 2. Like, I want to, you know, just be able to magnet that guy right on the top.
It's so confusing, though. If you look at their iPad lineup, it's iPad Pro, which is the new one.
Yeah.
And then they have the iPad Air. Sorry, I shouldn't say the. Then they have iPad Air, which is the, I don't even remember when that came out originally. Then they have the iPad.
Oh, what is the difference between the iPad and the iPad Air?
Oh, don't ask. It's the, well, here's the difference. The iPad Air, incredible power at incredible value. The iPad, our most popular iPad.
It's a different screen size. The iPad Air is 10.5-inch screen. The iPad is 9.7. I'm looking at the compare products thing here. So it actually, there's a smaller bezel.
But still, come on, look at how,
right.
Like, and Apple does this sometimes. People are always like, Steve Jobs would never have let this happen. Apple always does this. There's always a time in their product lineup. There's a word, by the way, that's missing from my brain right now. A catalog, that's it, literally. So there's always a moment in Apple's product catalog where the catalog just looks messy as fuck when they're transitioning from old products to new products. And what people do not expect, but happens every time, is that Apple keeps products around longer than any other company on this planet. Like, they will keep something around for 5 years. They just keep it around and they just sell it at a massive, massive margin. They know what they're up to. But also the way that they present it is that they still support older products. So I think what it does is gives you confidence that when you buy an Apple product, there's a lot of longevity. So, you know, if you bought the iPad, I think it will, the date, 300 BC. You know, it's still being updated, even though there wasn't even electricity when it came out. So I think it's impressive.
Yeah, it was amazing. So much foresight there to develop the iPad before electricity. Just assuming electricity would be developed. That's the kind of innovative minds. because I'm flipping through my tabs, I looked back at the Stadia marketing page. And after criticizing the Apple marketing page, I mean, it's like they're not even trying on the Google Stadia.
The Stadia one.
I feel like they just...
Stadia is good.
I feel like they just like weren't even... They were like, well, we announced it. We should put up a page.
You know what? But we both know from working inside large companies, priorities are not things you see from the outside. So,
oh, they usually are. I think they usually are.
Well,
I think with the marketing
incentives are maybe not as clear. So here's the way I see it. A lot of people are like, why did Apple announce these things now? Apple never announces things with no prices, especially they did an entire conference right now, an entire keynote, not one price. Why did they do that? It's obvious. Because they want the shareholders to see that there's going to be more growth coming from services. It's not about like, oh, getting people excited for Apple products. It's like, shareholders in Q2, you kind of need to know where some money's going to come from, right? These things here. Wait a second. Let me just read this out to you, Mr. Shareholder or Mrs. Shareholder. New ways to experience TV news and magazines and games and a new type kind of credit card. Jesus, who wrote this? I think it's perfect. I'm excited about Apple. I'm excited. One thing I have to say about Apple that I love it because it's so cheeky. It's the cheekiest thing. No other company does this, but the cheekiness level is so high. Apple just like doesn't give a shit what people want them to do. They just do what they want. And the best way to see that in action is just how little things change year over year. Well, like when they come up with a new body for a product, let's say the MacBook Pro, when they're like, this is how it looks now, people are like excited about the new version, you know, year over year. They're like, oh, it's going to have a bigger screen, or the bezels are going to be smaller, or maybe they'll fix the touch bar, or maybe they'll do this. And Apple's just like, nah.
None of that.
This thing is staying exactly like this for the next 5 years, my friend. And then we're going to release something that's called the Something Pro 2 Plus, and that's actually going to be the new thing, but it's going to be super expensive and super underpowered, and everyone else still has to buy the old thing for the next 3 years, just like the MacBook Air. And it's so funny. I love it. It's so cheeky, so confusing. Like the MacBook Air and the MacBook in that product lineup make no sense at all. Like the Mac lineup is so confusing now. Because the iMac has been updated and in some cases is more powerful than Mac Pro. I love it. It's great. I can't understand it. I can't understand any of it, and I love it.
Okay, for people who have listened this long, there must be, you know, either you're in a situation where you can't switch the podcast, or maybe you're interested in
tied up.
Yeah, hands are tied in some literal or figurative sense. Or way into Apple. So I'm going to give people a little Easter egg here at the end, which is how I use my iPad Pro. And I found it very delightful after having had...
Which size?
First, I bought the big one first, and I actually returned it because it was just clownishly big to me. It was just too big. I would take it out. I would feel like I needed to do more upper body strength exercises to just sort of hold it with my fingers. Like just, it was just a lot. It was just too big. And so I returned it. I got the smaller one. Super happy with the smaller one. Yeah, so this is the iPad Pro. It's got the pen and everything. But what I did to it, and I've had many iPads over the years, but what's different about this one that's making me like it a lot more, although I'm not using it anymore, is for one thing, I think they've really, with the pen, they finally integrated it into all kinds of stuff. So if you like edit a Pages doc, which I'll do on the iPad, and you mark it up with the pen, those marks will like transfer over to the Mac and you can see them there and like edit them on the Mac as well. It's just like really nice. Like it's sort of fluid in a way that it hasn't been in the past. The writing is like pretty much zero latency. So it really can feel like you're writing on something, which at least when I first used the pencil on the iPad in the past, it wasn't like that. So all that stuff is really nice. The thing that's made the iPad feel better to me is that I did the distraction-free iPhone thing to the iPad. I deleted everything. I took off the browser, I took off email, I even shut off iMessages because I'm like, the only thing I want to do with this when I'm using it, I want it to just be for creating stuff. I want to either be drawing or like typing, because actually it can be a really nice focused way to write or to type text, because it's got the keyboard and it's reasonable size that you can do that. And then there's nothing else on the screen. So I just deleted tons of apps. I didn't install any new like fun stuff. I just took everything off, took the news off. Yeah, and I just only added Pages and Dropbox. And the other thing is that the iCloud integration is really nice. Like the folders thing works really nicely. Like you can add Dropbox. You can actually edit a Pages document on the iPad. And then without doing anything special, it's just like automatically integrated through Dropbox, not even through iCloud. It's automatically going to update on the Mac. All that stuff is super sweet. So yeah, it's turned into this really like, it feels like a tool, which I think was always why I bought iPads in the past thinking they would be a tool, and then they ended up being this like weird sort of like time waster kind of in between thing to me. And I've really enjoyed it as a super focused tool. So not for everybody for cool. sure, but for me, that's been kind of cool.
I just use it for YouTube. It's literally my YouTube machine, and Slack. I sometimes check Slack on it in the morning, but mainly yeah, those it's are the worst. YouTube those are, machine.
So you're the worst. You're the worst, basically.
I'm the worst.
Ruining your breakfast.
Yeah, I don't need it at all.
Yeah.
But I like getting Apple stuff because it's nice. It's a pity the AirPods 2. I mean, the AirPods 2, by the way, is also a great example of Apple. It's like the best product. Everyone loves the AirPods. Oh my God, what's going to happen? Oh, what's Apple going to... Oh, okay. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Okay. Well, actually, I'm fine. I don't have to buy any new AirPods, but I was always like hoping that there would be some mini thing that they would change. Of course, like Ask Siri kind of built in and all that. Don't really care.
There's been a lot of speculation about them making black AirPods.
Yeah, matte black.
I was surprised they didn't do that, because then I thought you would have that. You know, I think if you're an Apple fan, you have that twinge when there's something and you're like, oh yeah, I don't really need it, but
if someone else has them,
I really want it.
Yeah.
And I think that I could have imagined the black AirPods doing that, but maybe you actually do that and they stop looking so special. I mean, maybe there's something special about them being
true.
White. I don't know. Who knows? I'm sure they thought
about
true. It. Or maybe they're saving that for later. Because the other thing is they got to think there's not like an endless supply of little cheap improvements they can do, like changing the color and changing the material. Maybe with the AirPods, they got to save that one for when times are tough.
They did these really nice iPhone covers last year with these sort of pastel blue, pastel reddish orange.
Yeah.
I think I'd buy a pair of pastel blue AirPods. And then the cool thing is that because it's trendy, after 6 months, you'll think they look like shit, like I did with the cover. And then you have to get a different pair of AirPods. So yeah, I think that that's probably what I would do. For me, when I saw the AirPods update, I was like, yeah, that's Apple, all right. It's cheeky. They don't care. They're like, oh yeah, everyone thinks there's going to be another color. Everyone thinks it's going to like, they're going to spin around. Everyone thinks that they're going to be like really big and they burst your ears. But no, it's the same thing. Same one, same exact thing. There you go. Wireless charging case that don't care.
I would almost buy the new case just because of the magnet. There's so much little like dirt that collects in the hinge.
Mine's
I'd almost
disgusting.
Buy a new one just to not have to clean that. You know,
mine is so dirty. If I open my AirPods case and look in, I almost puke. It's like, oh, hey, I'm just going to... so disgusting.
Just going to listen to... Oh, God.
Yeah, it's just... Oh, hey, oh, yeah, let me just... I just want to take this call here. Let me just... 2 seconds. I just got to... Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God. Yeah, I think my dirty AirPods... My dirty AirPods should be the name of this episode. How about that? I think that's a good one. My dirty AirPods plus. I think this was a good episode.
We were going to do a masterclass ad.
Oh, let's do it. Jason, can you put some money sounds? Like sounds of money. And we're going to say an ad. You know, by the way, Jake, we're supposed to put ads in like the middle of the podcast or somewhere else where people listen to it.
Yeah.
Let's do it anyway.
Let's do it. It's good practice for us for another time.
Yeah. The Design Sprint Masterclass is the best way to learn.
I liked how that voice was like, it's like when you're reading it, but you're actually not reading it.
Yeah. So look, here's the thing. If you're a designer or if you're a coach, and Jake, by the way, listen, I've got a new way of selling the masterclass.
I want
to talk to you about this.
Okay.
So here's the thing, right? We've been looking at who's buying it. We had our like 1,200th customer.
Wow. That's cool. Oh, by the way, actually, quick interruption, just in case you're listening to this, which is probably one of the worst podcast ads ever made. But we're talking about a thing that's like, it's like a video class, an online class. It's got like content and stuff you can download.
Yeah.
AJ and Smart put it together. I'm in a bunch of the videos or some of the videos. We do Q&As, but it's a class to learn how to do design sprints.
Yeah. It's like an online course with like video Q&A calls and loads of resources and all that kind of stuff and a closed community and stuff like that. If you're a designer or if you're a consultant in a sort of innovation world, one of the absolute guaranteed ways to up your game and even up your salary. This is just truth now. I'm not doing an ad read.
It sounds like an ad read. It really does. But
future. It's the future way we're going to be advertising this product. One of the ways to really, really up your game is the ability to be able to run multiple different types of workshops. So for example, if I would separate designers who are sort of in the more production mode from designers who are really able to do a lot of different things and get invited also into sort of more business meetings or more product strategy meetings. It's the ones who are able to facilitate potentially very complex meetings, all the different types of things that come up in the product world, like product strategy meetings, like straight up brainstorming or business modeling meetings.
I would say, honestly,
the design...
Just to interrupt you for a second. Well, no, sorry.
Keep going.
You keep going. I'll put my thing.
No, but if you have something to add, it could be good though, you know?
It could be good.
We're working out the ad.
Okay, yeah. I think there is a way to get into those conversations, to raise your influence in product world, if you're developing a product as a designer, that involves just being like a really good product designer, like a really good leader that has nothing to do with running design sprints or workshops.
Genius.
But it's the hard way. It's the hard way to do it.
Exactly.
And there is also a way.
Exactly.
And it also depends, like a lot of times people who are very well qualified to be at the table in those conversations about product strategy, there are a lot of reasons why you might not be able to get there through like sheer merit alone.
Yes.
I can
yes.
think of a lot of folks I've worked with who are great designers who don't even really go in for facilitation. It's not a thing they do. And they've reached a situation where they have a lot of influence due to merit. But not everybody I know who has merit, who's able to do it, has gotten into that situation. And the design sprint is a nice way in facilitating workshops. I think what you're talking about, it's like,
yeah.
I don't want to say it's like a shortcut, but it is a way to create an environment where everybody, not just you, is able to be involved in that stuff. And you're the one who can bring it in, which does elevate your role. I don't know. Anyway, we didn't talk beforehand, but that's just kind of a thought I had while you were talking.
No, that's exactly it. It's like the design sprint. Obviously, like if you listen to this podcast, it's very likely you already know what the design sprint is. So we don't really need to tell you, but it's a step-by-step system for bringing a group of people together, working together on a big problem, prototyping it within 1 week and having something tangible within a very short amount of time. But what we started to see within the masterclass is that the people buying it are actually more like the type of people you would find in McKinsey and Bain, who are buying it for themselves to learn how to run different types of workshops. So they're not actually really necessarily running sprints. They're breaking down parts of it. Like, for example, the morning of day one, we have constant communication with these people in the private group. And pretty much every day, someone posts a new custom workshop that they've run for their company using the principles of the design sprint process, but not necessarily using the exact order and everything that they've put together. So I think it's what's really interesting is if you're the type of person who's working in a company where you running different custom workshops could be advantageous to your career or the product you're working on, then you should absolutely check out the Design Sprint Masterclass. And here's the thing, right?
I like how there's a moment when you're doing this when it crosses a threshold where you can't not laugh.
I want to go home. I want to go home. So here's the thing. If you go to the link in the description or go to ajandsmart.com/masterclass, if you use the code BUYSPRINT, B-U-Y, Sprint for a limited time, you get €500 or $600 off the price of the masterclass. You should do it.
It's a good
really.
Discount. Yeah.
And if you don't like it, you can just get your money back. It's easy. So just give it a go, you know? And this is the best way to support the show.
That's actually true.
We need to make our money back from sponsoring the talk show. So everyone here who's from the talk show, go ahead and buy that. So
actually, if one person would just buy like five or six masterclasses, we'd be square. That'd be good.
Yeah. So buy the masterclass, use the code BUYSPRINT. You know, within a few weeks, you'll have the opportunity to have a Q&A call with people like Jake Knapp, you know, the guy who's you, Jake.
The guy is you.
That's lucky part of the matter. It's cool, yeah.
I just had a moment of regret right here where I feel like we got all these people from the John Gruber, from Daring Fireball, right? Like people who are used to an extremely high caliber of discussion about Apple. Instead of showing them what we know the most about, instead of talking about maybe sprints or something, we talked about Apple like a bunch of idiots. Like we were just talking about Apple. We don't really know what we're talking about.
I disagree. I think we did it in the most Product Breakfast Club way possible.
That's true. It was honest.
Yeah. It's the way we are. We're talking about it as the way, you know, we're talking about it. It's just noise. We're making noise for people's ears, for people's dirty AirPods. I think that's already enough. Jake, where can people find you on the internet? Where should they look?
Go look around. Go to jakeknapp.com. You'll find everything you want to know about me there. Where can people find you, John?
Oh, that's a bit personal, isn't it? Well, you can find me on either @jicecream on Instagram or nowhere else. That's basically it. Just look for me there.
You have the moment where you're like, I don't really want to be checking other things.
I downloaded Twitter the last 2 weeks. So first of all, I do think Twitter is the best product for finding like really good information, especially around product design. It was like a really, really inspiring 2 weeks. Just having it on my phone, like every so often, opening it up and being like, oh my God, it's so cool. So much. Like if you follow the right people, you get such great information and it's really high caliber stuff, a lot better than you find on Instagram or Facebook. However, it's mixed in with so much outrage and so much politics that I had to just get it off my phone because there was more negative than positive. And I just started to feel a little bit anxious after using it for about 2 weeks. So I've put it back to just using it on desktop mode, which is totally fine by me because I can check it, you know, a few times a day and I'm not like obsessively checking it on my phone. I had a big realization over the last 2 weeks. I've been saying this on the podcast for a little bit. I think that Twitter could be the best social network because it's maybe has the most valuable information. If I was just able to like not see all the political outrage, and no matter how many people I blocked or how many people I muted, I couldn't get around it because people go to Twitter to do that, you know?
Yeah.
So it was an interesting 2 weeks.
Yeah, I've set up this Freedom app on my desktop so that I don't have Twitter on the phone, and I blocked it every day except Tuesday. So just like Tuesdays, I can check it.
Twitter Tuesday.
Twitter Tuesday, exactly. And I actually feel better not checking it every day. Although, like you said, it has really good, it can be really interesting. But
so many good accounts.
Even to me, it's not even like, I mean, the political stuff, I don't know. I feel like I can largely let that slide off, but it's a lot of it is the, I get envious of people or, you know, like somebody tweets about some great thing that happened to them and I'm so petty. I'm like, oh man, I wish I was doing that thing, you know, like, or it's just distracting too. It's like there's always something interesting, and I know if I keep scrolling, I'll find another like cool post or something, and it's just too much.
I want to recommend a cool channel though, or a cool account.
Yeah.
At Vala Afsar. Vala Afsar. VALAAFSHAR. I know I said H the Irish way.
You better put it in the show notes because I...
Yeah.
For one thing, it's not Tuesday, so I can't even act on it, but people will want to know.
Exactly. But I feel like if I could set up Twitter so that when I open up the home screen and it's just showing me the stuff, I know that means that I'm in a bubble, but I'm not interested in the political stuff anyway. I'm interested in the super nerdy product stuff. But what I don't like about Twitter is it seems to be almost like the place where a lot of people just go to complain about stuff. I just unfollowed a designer that I really liked this morning because he was like, you know what I hate? And I was like, delete, don't care. And it's always like some type of person that people don't like. And then other people do like that type of a person. I'm like, I don't care. And yes, I get it. Donald Trump's, I get it, right? I don't need to see it every 2 minutes.
It's tough. It's tough too, because it's like, I mean, people should be able to talk about what they want to talk about, but I just can't handle it all the time. I just can't handle it all the time.
Yeah.
I need a break.
The thing is, they can talk about it because I'm not going to argue with them because I'm not going to
You're not there.
You know? I'm not there. I just want to talk about video games and design. All right, Jake, have a really lovely week. And everyone listening, everyone who gets to the end of this podcast, look, it's probably not a lot of you that get to the end of the podcast. Most
like
people probably
people.
Listen to the first.
Hi, Mom.
Four people.
Hi, John's mom.
Hi, Jake's mom. thanks so much for supporting us.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, seriously, thank
thanks
you.
For supporting us.
We appreciate you listening. Like, it's really like, I guess John and I would talk anyway, but it's a pain to record it.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't record it and we wouldn't talk about stuff. It's because you guys are cool. Thanks for listening. Should we sing it out, you think?
Yeah, let's sing it out.
Okay.
Product Breakfast Club!
Product Breakfast Club!